Good morning, everyone. Thank you all for being here. Today is October 27th, Tuesday, and we are at the Board of Supervisors meeting. I'd like everyone please to stand for our Pledge of Allegiance. And if you could remain standing afterwards, we have Pastor Michael Douglas from the Servants Church to do our invocation.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Heavenly Father, we thank you for these men who represent us. Would you grant them great wisdom in their deliberations this morning. And for our region, we pray for a good snowpack this season, a relief from the drought, and we pray for safety and peace in our communities and prosperity in our business community as well. Amen.
Thank you very much, Pastor Douglas. Okay, we're having some technical difficulties here today, so this is our new screen that we've got up here for our presentation. So hopefully that will work good. We're going to start off today with a presentation from David Cooper and Mary Ann Lee. And that is the PowerPoint.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very fine. My name is Dave Cooper, and I'm one of the community members on the Children and Families Commission and also the current chair. And it's a real pleasure for me to be here today. I'm standing in for our Executive Director John Sims, who has had some health issues, but he's recovering and will be back to work very shortly. So it's a pleasure for me to be able to stand in for him. These highlights that we're going to talk about today are from this past year and very simple. Our mission is promoting the development and well-being of children 0 to 5 in Stanislaus County. The commission, the law for the commission was passed by California voters in 1998. It included a 50-cent tax on cigarette and tobacco products, and it is the funds are distributed based on live births. And regarding that, and the California Department of Finance projected 7,791 births for 2014 in Stanislaus County, or approximately 21 births per day. By contrast, in 2002, there were 7,929 births in Stanislaus County. So as you can see, those have been reduced over time, and that's also affected our funding. Our revenues are declining. In 2003 and 4, we received $8.1 million, and now this year, the year we're talking about, we received $5.1 million. So you can see that there's been a loss in revenue, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. Even though there is a decrease in live births, another factor is that fewer people are smoking or are purchasing tobacco products online from other states. In 2014-2015, the membership of the commission was made up of 4 community representatives, a community school representative, a county supervisor, our man Vito, a county health officer, and 2 county department heads. And today I would like to introduce some of our members who are here. First, the community members, Denise Hunt and George Skoll, and our county representatives that are here, Mary Ann Lee from HSA and Madeline Schupfer from BHRS. Also are the many partners that are a critical part of what we do as a commission. These different partners we're in contact with on a daily basis. We deal with them regularly, certainly involving our different programs. We're in partnerships with them, and they are really vital to what we do. And if there are any of our contractors in attendance, I'd like you to stand, please. Thank you very much. We're proud of the work they do, and we're certainly happy always to partner with them. Our services are countywide, and this is something that we're very proud of. As you can see from this slide, on the left-hand side, our community-focused programs, And the numbers next to the cities mentioned are those that have the numbers of programs funded by the commission that are located in those cities. For instance, in Ceres, we have the Ceres Partnership for Healthy Children, Family Resource Center, Healthy Birth Outcomes, and Healthy Start. In Oakdale, we have the Eastside Family Resource Center and Healthy Birth Outcomes. And in Turlock, we have the Aspira Family Resource Center, Healthy Start, and Healthy Birth Outcomes. Other programs are offered countywide, such as those in the second column, such as the 211 Project, the Children's Crisis Center, Healthy Cubs, and those sorts of things. So those are the services that we offer throughout the county. This is a slide that graphically we really like because it shows just how widespread throughout the county programs from the commission are in place. Not only that, but also it also indicates the amount of dollars that the commission has allotted to those different programs, and you can see these are located throughout the county, and that's something that we're very proud of. As we said earlier, we deal with 0 to 5 children and their families. And the population characteristics from this slide compare basically Stanislaus County with the state. In the 0-5 population in Stanislaus County comprises 8.7% in our community compared to 8.1% in the state. As has been the case for the past several years, Stanislaus 0-5 population is below the 200% federal poverty level, is higher when compared with the state's population. In Stanislaus County also, the infant mortality rate is higher than the state's, but the Stanislaus rate has been reduced from previous years, partially due to the commission and the programs it funds. Another important aspect of the commission is strengthening families. And we recognize that in order to provide a stable, healthy environment to children, families must be strengthened. This next slide illustrates the total participants by type. As you can see, 31,378 individuals were participants in our programs. Of that, the providers were 533, that little small piece of the pie. Those consist mainly of child signature program providers and also those who attend our biannual conference and also get college credit for their attendance. So that's where those numbers come from. Under parents and guardians, 14,972 includes 3,718 kits for new parents that are also provided by the commission. Other family members, siblings, for example, make up 14.3% of the participants served. So you can see that the lion's share of our services go to parents and families and guardians. The next slide is ethnicity and race compared to services. And this is an interesting slide because as you can see, the Stanislaus County is the dark green, the children served are the light green. And when we compare the ethnicity makeup of Stanislaus County to that of the children 0-5 who receive services, you can see it is quite similar. Another example is that the majority of children 0-5 in Stanislaus County are Hispanic, and the majority of children 0-5 that we are serving are also Hispanic. The next slide regards the language of the participants. And again, as you can see, with Stanislaus in dark green, the county, and light green for the children served, English and Spanish make up the majority of children 0-5 participants' primary language. Participants served almost exactly reflect the makeup of the community. So we think that's very important to show. Our budget in 2014-15 totaled almost $7.5 million. That budget has been decreasing over time, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But as you can see, the commission has taken the focused approach approximately 59% of its budget is allocated for programs that provide family support, such as the Family Resource Centers. Other example would be Healthy Start. The other big piece of the pie, the health part, you can see what was allocated, 23%, would include things like healthy birth outcomes, healthy cubs, and dental education. It's interesting to look in the past decade regarding, regarding the amounts of budget that have been spent. In the past 10 years, the Commission has budgeted approximately $103 million to address the needs of our local communities. The actual expenditures average about 85% of the budget, and our contract budgets average about 90 to 92% spent of the money that's allocated. The budgets reflect declining tax receipts and a declining fund balance, as we will talk about on the next slide. Under the use of the fund balance, it reflects declining tax receipts and a declining fund balance. At one time, the Commission had more than $24 million in reserves. However, at the end of 2014-15, we had a fund balance of $10.6 million. We have a very specific strategic plan in the Commission to spend down these budgets, or the extra amount of money that we have in our fund. And we've made a concerted effort to plan that ahead of time. All of our contractors and our programs understand exactly what we're doing in that regard. And in 3 to 4 commission years, the commission will reach an equilibrium. In other words, where the revenue will match the budgeted expenditures along with our 6 months reserves. But until that time, our whole focus is to maintain program sustainability. We've had training programs for our contractors in order to show them how they can sustain their programs, even if their amounts of money from the commission might decrease. And they have been very successful at doing that, as you will see. We'd like to share with you some of the highlights, about, especially in supporting families. The parents of 10,000-plus children receive family support services through our family resource centers and other programs. Over 2,000 children received more intensive support services focused on improving child abuse risk factors. And parents of over 1,200 children have increased parenting skills and knowledge after taking our parenting classes that we offer as a commission. Jumped ahead there. Safeguarding children's health. 411 children 0 to 5 and pregnant women who did not have access to health care received medical attention through an interim health care program. 363 pregnant women and children 0 to 5 who did not have health insurance are now enrolled in a health coverage plan. Almost 200 infants were born healthy after their mothers participated in a healthy birth program. And of 228 pregnant mothers who participated in that program, 208, or 91% of them, initiated breastfeeding. Cultivating futures through education. This goes back to our family training and our focus on the family. 1,200 families increased the time spent reading with their children at home after receiving literacy services. 144 children participated in the kindergarten readiness program, which is something that we're very proud of and something that we've seen some real focus on those kids that are not yet ready for kindergarten. 1,458 children 0 to 5 were screened for educational development issues, and 286 were referred for further assessment. Regarding lending via support services, the families of almost 7,000 children have increased knowledge and utilization through community resources. Prop 10 funded programs brought in more than $7 million from other funding sources, which is what we're talking about, sustainability for all our different programs, increasing the level of services for families and children. Of that $7 million, $5 million came from funding sources outside of Stanislaus County. So our programs have learned to leverage and apply for grants and create sustainability for their programs, and they've been very successful. To summarize, the voters approved Prop 10 in November of 1998, 17 years ago. The Commission has worked to support and fund programs that impact the lives of children and families in Stanislaus County. Our 2014-15 work is highlighted in our annual report to the community that will be released in local newspapers starting November 1st, and you have a copy of that in front of you. So on November 1st, the Modesto Bee, on the 3rd, Waterford and Houston, on the 4th, Oakdale, Riverbank, Ceres, and Turlock, and on the 5th, the West Side will get these summaries. On a personal note, I would just like to say that the members of the commission have a great deal of respect and admiration for the people on our staff. There are three people right now on our staff, our executive director, John Sims, Stephanie Loomis, who is our executive assistant, and Tina Jameson, who is our accountant. And those three people are essentially running the commission in a time where four or five years ago, there were twice as many people involved. So these folks have done a tremendous job. We just finished an audit, which is the ninth straight year that we've had an audit with absolutely no questions or indications whatsoever. And that's a real tribute to Tina Jameson and also to John and Stephanie. So we really want to express our appreciation to them. Are there any questions? I'd be happy to try to answer any.
David, thank you very much. Supervisor Chiesa.
More of a comment. I thank you very much. Great presentation. I'm glad you did it instead of John because he knows the stuff too well. The first slide you put up when we talked about the poverty level, I think it was the first slide, second slide. That says it all. We're substantially higher than the state, so we're dealing with a little different population, a needier population, and so this money has gone to good cause. We have intentionally, as you said, tried to spend down the money. There were some tough times in the economy. There wasn't a lot of money for programs, and so we kept funding the programs at the same level, and this is much like our jails. We always hope that if everyone stops smoking, there will be no money, and then we can walk away very proud of what we've done. But Dr. Walker, who's on the commission, always reminds me of one thing. The single greatest predictor of a child's health at birth is the educational attainment of the mother. And this kind of rolls into the focus on prevention. The Children and Families Commission has done that, essentially, since 1998. You've been trying to stop the problems before they occur through the educational process. And so with that, I love serving on it. I love serving with all of you folks. And I so much appreciate what you've done. So,
thanks, Vito. Supervisor Demartini.
Yes, you mentioned one of the programs that you do is strengthening families. Can you give us some examples of how you do that?
Yes. Let me go to that slide. One of the things we have are programs for families through our family resource centers where mothers and dads can come and work with their kids and teaching parents how to help their kids at home with homework, teach them how to interact with their kids in a positive way. It also has to do with working with pregnant mothers in prenatal education and working with them after the fact to follow up with them. It also has to do with our medical kits or our parent kits that we give out to parents of newly born children. It has a lot of information about things that are offered in the county. And those are the kinds of just a few examples of what we do.
Okay, thank you.
Very good. Any other questions? David, thank you very much. You guys are truly doing the Lord's work here, and it really, all the success that you have just flows through to the rest of this county and makes it a better place. So thank you guys for everything you're doing. Okay. Next up, we have a presentation from Regina Valentine, Transportation and Development Act on the Unmet Transit Needs Process. Regina, how are you?
Fine, and you?
Good.
Great. All right, great. Good morning, Chair, members of the
We're going to get you closer to that
mic.
Oh, yes.
There. There. Thank you. Good morning. Good morning, Chair, members of the Board of Supervisors. As you mentioned, my name is Regina Valentine, and I'm with the Stanislaus Council of Governments. I want to thank you for allowing me to speak with you this morning about the Transportation Development Act and Unmet Transit Needs Process. I would also like to recognize StanCog's Executive Director, Rosa Park, who's in the audience this morning. Okay. So who is the Stanislaus Council of Governments? We are a joint powers authority composed of representatives from each city and the county. I'd like to recognize all five of you who serve on our policy board representing the county. We serve as the Metropolitan Planning Organization and Regional Transportation Planning Agency for the Stanislaus region. StanCog is responsible for addressing regional transportation issues, including public transportation. So regarding public transportation, StanCog administers the Transportation Development Act, which has two funding sources. There's the local transportation funds, which is derived from a quarter cent sales tax statewide. Our portion last fiscal year was around $20 million. And the state transit assistance funds, which is derived from a statewide sales tax on gas and diesel, our portion last fiscal year was around $3 million. According to the TDA, StanCog has some responsibilities. Every 5 years, the terms unmet transit need and reasonable to meet must be defined. Although there are lengthy checklists for these terms, in general, an unmet transit need cannot duplicate existing services. And for it to be considered reasonable to meet, it cannot cause the transit system to fail performance standards. Annually, StanCog is required to conduct at least one public hearing and prepare an unmet transit needs identification analysis report. StanCog must resolve any unmet transit needs that are reasonable to meet before local transportation funds can be used for non-transit purposes. So there are four major steps in the unmet transit needs process. Public hearings are held to receive comments about potential unmet transit needs. Next, potential unmet transit needs are analyzed according to the adopted definitions, and a report is prepared for StanCog Policy Board approval. Then any unmet transit needs determined to be reasonable to meet must be funded before local transportation funds can be distributed for non-transit purposes. So currently we are in the public hearing phase of the process, and we're here to hopefully spread the word and encourage public participation. I really enjoy holding these public hearings because it provides us an opportunity to meet with the riders one-on-one, receive feedback, and answer any questions they may have about services in the region. So this year we'll be holding four public hearings. The first was held last week at the StanCog Policy Board meeting. The next one will be held in Patterson on November 12th at the Hammond Senior Center. Following, there will be hearings in Oakdale on December 15th at the Jean Bianchi Community Center, and in Ceres on January 19th at the Community Center. A Spanish interpreter will be available at all four public hearings. In closing, I can answer any questions you may have, and you're welcome to contact me if you feel there are any unmet transit needs we should consider this year. I appreciate you allowing me the time to speak with you this morning.
Regina, thank you. Any questions for Regina? Supervisor Chiesa.
Yeah, how was the meeting attended at the StanCog Policy Board?
There's a lot of people there.
Was there?
Yes.
A lot? 10, 20, 30?
Well, there's two comments for unmet transit needs. So.
Two comments?
Yes.
Okay. And how are we doing outreach?
So we go to the congregate meal sites for the locations where we're having the public hearings. We also have been announcing at all the jurisdictions, and we also and then also going through our committees, trying to spread the word as much as possible. And if you guys know of anyone we could provide a flyer to, we would love to pass it out.
Okay. Thank you.
When you say, Regina, announcing all the jurisdictions, are you actually going to the different city councils?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Perfect. So you guys are my second one.
Very good. Who was the first? Why weren't we the first?
The city of Modesto, because of the hearing.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. That's okay.
I apologize.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? All right, Regina, thank you very much. Okay. We are going to move on now to public comment. And the first card I have here is for Reed Johnson. Reed, how are you?
Good, very good. Thank you. Good morning, Chairman Withrow and Supervisors Monteith and DeMartini and Chiesa and O'Brien. Thank you. I'd like to continue reading from the letter that I gave you last week. This outlined the formula that you can make health care affordable and available to everybody, and this also is the same formula that you can solve as supervisors most of the problems we face. But, of course, it's a big, mean world out there. If any of you have any hesitation to act in the best interest of people as their representatives, it would only be because you lack an understanding of the Constitution. A review of the Constitution, laws, and principles which should compel you to act to protect the people of Stanislaus County follows. So, whereas, I borrowed that word from higher pay grades, whereas the purpose of government is to establish justice and to secure the blessings of liberty for ourselves and our posterity. That's in the first sentence of the Constitution, and that's a prerequisite and condition for all government activities. That's the first sentence of the Constitution. The supreme law of the land is the unalienable rights of individuals, which is the basis of sovereignty and is the basis upon which the Constitution, its principles and laws, and the purposes and limited scope of government are founded. As stated in the Declaration of Independence, whereas governments are instituted among men to secure the rights of persons, and governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive to the rights of persons, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and to establish new government, laying its foundation upon such principles and organizing its powers in such form as of them shall most likely affect their safety and happiness. Again, from the Declaration of Independence. The Constitution established the limited and enumerated functions and powers of federal government and established that all powers not specified are reserved to the states and to the people. The First Amendment of the Constitution reminds government of the people's unalienable rights and the fundamental principle that we, the people, created government to protect our rights, properties, livelihoods, families, and communities. The function is for persons to petition the government for redress of their grievances, and then government to act in the best interest of the people to establish and maintain conditions of justice and liberty, and also bring accountability to wrongdoers who cause damages to people or are abusing government powers. Again, that's referred in the First Amendment to the Constitution. Elected representatives have taken an oath to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. An enemy of the Constitution is anyone abusing government powers, taking actions outside the purpose and limited scope of the Constitution, or infringing on anyone's unalienable rights. Causing damage to individuals and violating their unalienable rights is a crime, even and especially if it's done by government-sanctioned activities. Therefore, all laws, regulations, policies, and activities not fully in compliance with the Constitution's principles and specified purposes and scope for government are automatically nullified. And those participating in those activities are acting without government authority, and they're personally and criminally liable. America is not a democracy. It is a republic where the supreme law is the individual's unalienable rights. The constitutionally specified purposes and limited scope of government is supreme, no matter how many people vote for something to the contrary. The majority does not have any right or basis to impose their will on the minority. The purpose of government is to protect the rights of the individual, not to carry out the agendas of large population centers or political groups in power. Democracy is a leftist propaganda, where a group of people can impose their will on others by manipulating politics, media, government, elections, courts. Elections have become the tools of dictatorial socialists who manipulate them. Winning elections does not create any more power or authority or any mandate for political agendas. Elections are only to select individuals to represent the people and the Constitution. Elections have no authority to amend or override the U.S. Constitution or approve expenditures of public funds for anything not specifically authorized in the Constitution. massive and growing size of government and the regulatory agencies usurping power is unsustainable. It is destructive to our economy and future and a plague on the people and their livelihoods. Many people are suffering because of abuse of government powers and are wanting liberty. Justice is the missing law and ingredient. In order to establish liberty, wrongdoers who are abusing government powers must be stopped and brought to justice. Thank you, supervisors. I'll try and come back.
Thank you, Reed.
I appreciate you and your responsibility. I thank you for serving and your constitutional duties. Thank you.
Thank you. And I appreciate the video that you gave us. I have not watched mine yet, but if I will one night when we might get home early enough to actually not go to bed. So thank you, Reed. Okay. Next up, we have, I'm going to let Catherine and Emerson. I know that I have a card from Catherine, and I know Emerson wants to talk, and I know one of you wants to be last, so I don't want to make that call. I'm going to let you make that call. All right, Catherine. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good.
So good morning, supervisors, CEO Risen, and County Council Doring. I'd like to begin with a little story. When my son was a young child in the late 1990s, he went through a materialistic stage that was driving me nuts. So I wanted to show him what life was like for people who are less fortunate. I drove him to downtown Modesto and looked for homeless people. I didn't see any in downtown, so I drove along the Tuolumne River where the park is, and I still didn't see any. The most I found was a homeless encampment by the river and no people around, but that was enough to prove my point to him. If I wanted to deliver that same lesson now in 2015, I'd only have to drive as far as downtown Salida to find a homeless encampment. But I'm here today over my concern for the lack of participation by the other unincorporated communities in the Focus on Prevention initiative and to share with you what I've learned about the homeless and how they might be helped in the unincorporated communities. An important aspect I learned from attending the Homeless Action Council meetings is that there are at least three kinds of homeless in the unincorporated communities like Salida: homeless residents, vagrants, and those at risk of becoming homeless. The county did what's known by the HUD definition as a point-in-time count of actual homeless last January. This is the chart that was produced, and as you can see, Salida is not on it. As I mentioned in my story, Salida does indeed have homeless people, but sometimes they are very good at hiding. They've been hidden every time the county tries to do a point-in-time count, but if you live in Salida and you are paying attention like I do, you will eventually see them. These are photos that I've taken of encampments along the Union Pacific tracks in Salida. These are actual Salida residents who have become homeless, mostly due to drug addiction. From various sources, I have heard that nearly every homeless Salida resident has some form of drug or alcohol dependency. My little thing's not advancing. There it goes. Salida also has its share of vagrants that come through Salida via the train, the freeway, or even along the river. This man, Brian, has only one hand and has been panhandling between Salida and Modesto over the last year. The third category of homeless are the ones at risk of becoming homeless and living on the streets. They are the ones in the Stanislaus County Office of Education numbers. Salida's number is 83, but that may be a bit overestimated since part of Salida Union School District covers Modesto. Also included is a chart for Daenerys at risk. This one's Daenerys. Sometimes you hear these at risk of becoming homeless as being invisible because you don't see them on the streets, but they are not invisible in that we see them at the holidays. The churches in Salida see them more often than that. Salida has several food banks, a Christmas toy drive, and gives Thanksgiving dinners to families in need. The house in Modesto also provides resources for a Nineveh outreach in Salida once a month. But other than that, the unincorporated communities do not have the resources to help the homeless. So why do the homeless choose to stay in the unincorporated communities? For some, it's because there's less competition for food, money, etc., than in Modesto. For some, it could be because their dealer is there. And for others, very simply, because it's their home. They may be technically without a roof over their heads, but Salida is still their home. So for each unincorporated community, residents need to gather and identify the needs to be met. Salida will be different than Keys, from Denair, than even Valley Home. Wesley and Grayson do not have a PIT count, but the number for those at risk of being homeless in Supervisor DeMartini's district is staggering. Also keep in mind that Salida didn't have a PIT count. There it goes. Either, so that doesn't necessarily mean that there aren't any homeless there. They may just be great at hiding during the day. Talk about homeless hiding. I had heard at the summit that the homeless in Keys live in an area in the community between the community and Highway 99 and at one of the parks. I drove out there on a Sunday and I did not find any homeless people or encampments in Keys. So I had the bright idea of stalking the United Samaritan food trucks to see if any homeless people appeared. Not such a bright idea after all. The truck was late in Denair and I only ever saw this one fellow walking. So I headed over to Keys, and if any of the people that went to the truck were homeless, I couldn't tell. We have people living in the care homes in Salida that are scruffier looking than anyone I saw in Keys that day. As for what Salida needs for our homeless, I don't have the answer to that. But I think it could and should be a community-wide decision. We have a homeless woman in Salida named Debbie who bathes in the MID canal. This is her bathtub. Yuck, right? A resident who has seen her do this told me she even has a little cubby hole near where she keeps her shampoo. How can we help Debbie? At the summit, there was a display by the church in the park that is building a mobile shower bus. That could be something that helps Debbie, but depends on the various factors of communicating its existence to Debbie and seeing if she would use it and providing the funding for it to come to Salida. The United Samaritans told me their food truck doesn't come to Salida because they don't have the funding to. Communication is the key to making focus on prevention work. You need to communicate to your communities what needs to be done, and we need to know your expectations. And communication is needed with our homeless and those at risk. One method of communication that would be extremely helpful would be for the homeless advocates that shared their stories to communicate with the homeless in our communities. I've spoken with a few of the homeless people in Salida, but they are not going to open up to me. A suburban housewife whose worst case of substance withdrawal was from going for 3 days without coffee. It's not that I don't want to talk to them, as I obviously have, but I'm not equipped. And Salida is not equipped as an unincorporated community to deal with their needs. They will open up to a peer. They will open up to someone who has been in their shoes and understands what they are going through. We need their help to be able to help. Because we're unincorporated, you control our tax dollars. We can't just delegate a staffer to work on this. If you don't want the homeless people in the unincorporated communities to fall through the cracks, we need your help most of all. We need you to communicate to the unincorporated communities. Find people who are willing to help, engage your community to identify the needs, and then commit the resources to it. We are dependent on you, my dear Board of Supervisors, to make Focus of Prevention succeed in the unincorporated communities. Tonight, I will present a similar presentation to Salida MAC, but tailored more for Salida to get our community involved. Thank you for implementing the program, and thank you for your help.
Thank you, Catherine. Any questions, Catherine? No. Catherine, thanks for all you do. So many times we sit here and have people that come up and are upset that we are not doing enough, but you come up here and actually are doing things and telling us what you're doing, and we very much appreciate it because that's how things get done. So thank you very much. Emerson. I'm doing this on osmosis. I don't even have a card for you, but I just...
That's the only way to get the last word. Everybody knows how to play the game. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, ladies and gentlemen. Now, I've got a couple topics I want to hit today, and the only dim bulb in the room tonight is the one that shuts you off. So, 3 weeks ago, I believe it was, we found out an unfortunate number, and that were 7 different rapes were referred to the Stanislaus County District Attorney's Office. So when the Modesto Bee, because I left voicemails that never were returned from Stan State, went to the district attorney's office and said, can you tell us how many of these were prosecuted? The response truly was, oh, we don't track that. Well, this is a concern. Why would the DA not? Well, we don't track rape counts. We don't track specific allegations. Now, if you want to give us a name, nobody was pressing for the names. We don't want to know about those unfortunate victims. That's not the point. But when the DA stood here just about a month and a half ago and was regaling us with the tales of the white slavery that goes on here, and that's a serious problem, don't misunderstand me, but refuses to acknowledge whether or not she's prosecuted seven different rape charges that were referred to her for that same prosecution, I find that to be difficult. I find that to be problem. I find that to be abhorrent. Secondly, moving right along, something a little more light. The Downtown Improvement Association, the CBD, the Community Benefit District. You know, the biggest concern I had there, some people call it the greater good, but we could only get 40% of private landowners to buy into it. And it took the city, the county, the improvement district, whatever, it's not the right term, but let's just call them public agencies, to put it over the top. You know, it bothers me the fact that public agencies, the city and the county, and the redevelopment district, I think that's what it was, turn around and force people to tax themselves. So I said, why would that be allowed by the public? So I went to some of the people. I got the report of the list, shows who was for it and who was against it. City was very helpful with that. Public record request. And I went to some of these landowners and business owners and said, well, why didn't you protest? You're going to pay the tax anyway. Well, the bottom line was they'd been told by the Chamber of Commerce, if you want to continue to do business with our companies, you're going to keep your mouth shut. Why else would somebody be willing to be taxed and not speak out that doesn't want to be taxed? If you want to be taxed, you say yes. If you don't, you remain silent, but don't speak out against it. And unfortunately, the city and county went along for the greater good. I find that to be an issue. Last but not least, you know, we've talked for many years now asking for our good friend, don't misunderstand me, Lee Lundergan of the city clerk, or county clerk's office, to go electronic. It's important so people can actually do like the city and go online. Well, Ms. Lundergan's been very helpful. She responded to every question that I gave to her. The bottom line is, in our recent election that's continuing on, the Chamber of Commerce has this committee that's like 30 names, 30 words to make one name. And they decided, and they filed with the city of Modesto like they were supposed to, but on those $1,000 donations, which all but two have been in the first round, they sent in their 497s, I believe it's called, that you have to file within the 24 hours, but they faxed it to the county. Now, why they would accept this, I don't know. And why they would take that piece of paper and put it in a manila folder from a basically dead committee that had nothing to do, if you look at the title, with the one that's currently going after our farmland. And miraculously look in that same folder 9 days later and go, oh, look what I found. And then it takes two more days, so it's 11 days from the time the county gets it, to go those two blocks to hit the sixth floor of 1010 10th Street, right where we are, so we can get this information on file. So finally, week ago Monday, they put it up. I was very impressed. Well, by Thursday, it was gone again. Actually, this was just last Monday. By Thursday, it was gone again. So I called the county clerk, and they said, well, we don't know what happened. It was up. You know that, Emerson. We talked about it. This is true. But we've seen the Chamber of Commerce purposefully avoid a timely response to $1,000 donations, and that's an issue. Because what happened? What did we get just last Friday? We got a new mailer. They spent over $30,000. It's amazing that $7,500 from Tenet. I go, what the heck's Tenet got it? Well, Bill Lyons is on the board. That kind of explains it. Why else would they care? But we have people, and unfortunately, at least one of them is on the board that's supporting this pack of lies that the chamber has been presenting. You can't call it anything else. But when they purposefully and willfully and maliciously hide those contributions past the time limit, I think that's something people need to know. And I think the Modesto Bee should tell them about it, but they won't. I thank you very much for the extra 20 seconds. Any questions?
Thank you, Emerson. Any questions? Supervisor Kennedy.
I just
want to comment, and I think I'm right, but as of January 1st, that's right, the Board of Supervisors and the constitutional offices, clerk recorder, assessor, sheriff, DA, everyone's going to be online, finally, after you asking for the last year and a half. So,
year and a half? Okay, we'll go with that.
2 years?
Previously asked for.
It was when Modesto went online. So anyways, we are going to go live January 1.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Emerson.
Even the Stanislaus County Library is telling me back to 2007, the fines I've paid, over $300. I've got my own shelf. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, that's all the cards we have. And any other public comment before we move on? Okay, seeing none, we're going to move on to our consent calendar. Is there any item on consent calendar anyone on the board would like to pull?
Yes. just for comment, but now
you've lost what you...
I threw away the paper I wrote on channelization, Gear Road channelization. Is that C2? Okay, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
C4.
C4.
C4, okay.
We will. And then if we, Chairman, if we could pull A4B, we're going to bring that back at another time.
Okay, so we're going to completely pull item A4.
A4B.
A4B only. Okay. Okay, very good. And then any other items to pull? Anyone in the audience like to pull anything? Okay. So let's go ahead to, if we can get a motion to approve consent calendar with the exception of items A4B and item C, what did we say, C4. C4. Do we have a motion to approve all except
motion
those?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve. Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. Let's move on to item C4.
And mine was just a comment from City Manager Raul Mendez wanted to be here today. Of Houston, and he couldn't. His daughter's playing in a sectional tennis match. So he wanted to strongly support this. I know we have awarded that it's under construction. Essentially today, I think, is when they start construction. And there's also the signalization project, which is out to bid, closes tomorrow, the next day. The signalization of Hatch and Santa Fe. And this has been just my comment. This has been much needed. We've been waiting for it. It's been on the books for years. It's been funded for years, but we still have to get through BNSF, and there's some challenges there. But the construction of the channelization is starting to occur.
Channelization starts tomorrow. Physical construction. They're mobbed in right now, so yeah. You see activity. And then the item before you right now is the signalization, and we're still waiting for BNSF to do some work. But we're hopeful that in about December – we kick off the signal work. There's some utility work as well. So it'll probably move slow through the winter, waiting for BNSF. Last we heard was that they would have their work started in about 4 weeks, but they're not always reliable, so we're being very patient with them.
Much like our online records, 460 online, they said that about 2 years ago. But anyways, we're getting closer, right? Getting closer.
Yes.
But much needed if you've ever gone to that intersection. If you live in Houston or you're coming from Waterford by way of Hatch, there's a backup there in the morning about, I don't know, it's about
miles.
Half a mile. So it's much needed, but BNSF is going to have to be a good partner in order to get that completed in a timely manner. And they haven't been great partners yet. So, anyways, with that, I make the motion to accept C4.
We have a motion to accept C4. Do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks, Vito. Okay, let's move on to item A6 with Lee. Lee, how are you this morning?
Good morning. Great. Good morning to the board and Chairman Withrow, CEO Risen, and County Council Doering. I'm glad to be here today. I am here today to kind of explain a little bit what's going on with the A level, and it's A6, 7, and 8. So kind of wanted to give you guys a little bit of background on this. We're having an election, as you're all aware, and that election takes place next Tuesday, 1 week from today. When that election takes place, There were originally 143 seats up for election in that election, 92 different offices, 143 seats. On the ballot, you're going to see, of the 92 offices, only 24 offices, and 67 candidates running for those 143 seats. The rest of them, there are 68 offices which are not going to be on the ballot, and that's what you're looking at today. Where did these numbers come from? These are the individuals that, or I shouldn't say the individuals, but the offices in which individuals chose not to run for office. So I'm looking at my election, no election list in front of me, and it's quite lengthy, and it indicates that there is an election for every single city event that is up. So the city of Ceres and the city of Modesto both have their mayors, their city councils, and in the case of Ceres, their treasurer position up for office. But the rest of them, and I look at them in front of me, have very few people running for them. If you look, I have school district and special district in front of me, and primarily in those areas is where we see the no election taking place. What you are seeing before you is three different areas. You're seeing the first area, number six, in which the positions are at large, and so they're both appointed people and vacancies. That's the combination. In number seven, all vacancies, not a single person filed. And in number eight, you're seeing all those people appointed in lieu because only one or fewer people, I shouldn't say a few people, there is no race because there is not two people running for the same position. So there are people that applied for it that are going to be up and running for that. Do we have an answer for this? And the answer is no, we do not. But I do have some information I can give you, and I will let you come to your own conclusions as to what's taking place. In Stanislaus County, we have 18 different types of elections. We have a federal, which is our congressional 10th. This is just local stuff. In state, we have our statewide offices, state senate, assemblies, and the Board of Equalization. In the county, we have five supervisorial districts. We have countywide offices, which would be our assessor, auditor, clerk recorder, district attorney, sheriff, superintendent of schools, and treasurer tax collector. We have nine cities, and we have a variety of districts. We have County Board of Education, which is one district. We have school districts. There are 24 different districts. Community college districts, one. Community service districts, eight. Fire protection districts, five. Irrigation districts, six irrigation districts. Hospital districts, three. Municipal advisory councils, which we call MACs, there are eight of them. And sanitary districts, two. What we are seeing is a trend, and that trend is toward redistricting status of going from at-large elections to trustee elections. So the numbers on those have risen greatly in the last year to 2 years, and we are seeing most of the at-large districts where people used to run at-large. Now they have broken up into various districts, and those districts are not filling to their capacity with people running to vote. So I can't tell you that that's the reason, excuse me, why this is happening, but I can definitely tell you that that is happening, and it's happening out in that area. The other thing I just wanted to mention just real quickly is in terms of shared districts. A lot of people don't really familiar with this, but many of our districts are shared with other counties. There are primarily school districts because a school doesn't have to be within county boundaries. So we share districts with Merced, San Joaquin, Santa Clara, and I think that's about it, in various areas around the county. So where they pop over the line, and we conduct their elections often for them because we are the primary, which means we have most of the voters in them, and maybe 100 people will live across the line. So an idea of that would be, let me see, one of this going this time. We have Oakdale Irrigation District 2, shares with San Joaquin. We have school districts that share with them outside the district. But that's kind of how that works. I have a list if you're interested. The last thing I want to bring up is next year's schedule. And I'm looking at next year's schedule, and you know how they talk about season, Christmas season, fall season? This is going to be election season next year, I'm afraid. It looks to me like we could have as many as 6 elections between next Tuesday and November of 2016. We just had, we're just having the UDEL election, Unified Uniform District Election Law, which is the consolidated election, which is definitely going forward next Tuesday. We potentially have a recall election for the city council in Patterson, which it depends upon how quickly they get their signatures, they turn them into us, how quickly we can get them reviewed, a variety of things. So we don't have a date for that. The city of Modesto has a runoff date of February 2nd in the event their mayor does not get 50% plus one on the first ballot. The city of Newman is potentially having a special election on either March 8th or May 3rd. They haven't advised us yet. We are going to have a presidential primary on June 7th and a presidential general election on November 8th. So it's probably going to be the busiest season of elections, the busiest year of elections we have ever had in this county since I have been in office, and that's over 14 years. We did have another one that was really, really busy, and Jim remembers this, when we had, I believe, 5 elections. But this is potentially 6 that we are aware of. Anyone who wishes to have all of the details of, like, numbers, et cetera, what's going on, if you look inside the front cover of the sample ballot pamphlet, which I have a copy of right here, it will give you pretty much all those numbers. So in Stanislaus County, we have over 400 elected officials. And of those elected officials, as I indicated earlier, which I have now lost in my paperwork, there are over 143 seats were available in this election. So it was a fairly good size election. And unfortunately, you know, only 24 offices and 67 candidates are running for them. And every single city is very busy. So it's mainly those other election areas that are weaker in terms of candidates. How can I answer any questions for you?
Any questions of Lee? Jim?
I just had one. I was looking over the list. I believe Wesley Community Service District didn't have anybody running for that either. I don't see it listed. I made a call about that, trying to get somebody to run.
When we hand these down to the clerk of the board, she puts them in the areas, the 3 different areas. So, Christine, could you assist us with that?
I've had to make several calls this week trying to get somebody to fill these vacancies, and yeah. Wesley was one of them that I had called. I just don't see it listed.
Jim, I think it's on 6A there. We see item 6A, Henry Galvin and Donald Little. Is that right?
Let's see. Okay, I'm sorry, I missed that. I was looking down at number 7, so.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Okay.
Any other questions
for Lee? Lee, thank you very much. I can speak for the whole board. We're all very proud of all the work you do and very confident that you do a great job there.
Thank you.
It's comforting for us to know when you're there. So
thank you.
Thank you for
everything. I would like to mention just really quickly and respond to Mr. Drake. He did have a few things he brought up, so I thought it was probably a good time. I did have an opportunity to talk with Mr. Drake and fully explain to him before he came before you, so that's probably where he got most of his information. Is that right? Oh, he's gone.
He left.
The Chamber of Commerce does have a committee that is open that is within our office. All of the FPPC paperwork is held within our office. This is one that was sent to us. We assumed it was that one because we're very busy right now. We're right in the middle of election. So it was just set aside, and when it was reviewed to be put into a file, it was noted at that time that it was specifically for something outside the office, at which time it was sent down to the city clerk. So just busyness, I guess.
It's okay.
Anyway.
It happens. Okay. Thank you, Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we are going to move on to correspondence.
Approval of items.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Motion to approve items 6, 7, and 8. A6, 8, 7, 8, 8.
Second. We all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 5-0. That was Bill and Jim.
Oh, Jim.
Yes.
That make any difference?
Dick. Was it Dick?
I'm sorry, it was Dick.
Dick was the second.
It was Dick, yeah. Okay, my fault. That was my fault. All right, we will move on now to correspondence.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claim and refer to the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. Any Board of Supervisor reports? None. Legislative update. CEO Risen.
Thank you, Chair. Wanted to take just a minute to talk to you about some legislation that the governor signed regarding medical marijuana regulation and safety act. There were actually three bills that came together to form this act and essentially moves us away from an unregulated marijuana market to a state law regulated system. Just kind of briefly, these bills involve some licensing now of medical marijuana, in fact, over 12 different types of licenses. It does not preempt local control, so it's kind of procedures that that apply if a local agency allows medical marijuana dispensaries or cultivation or those types of things. Stanislaus County does not. So we will continue to maintain that posture, and so this state law has little effect on us until you make changes in your local position. The state licenses will begin issuing in January 2018 for those local agencies that allow it. They're monitored by over 11 different departments at the state level. The bills officially make marijuana an official agricultural crop regulated by the Food and Ag Commission. It restricts cultivation and dispensaries from being at least 600 feet from a school, but it specifies that patients and primary caregivers are exempt from the state licensing requirement. It does also uphold the local power to levy fees and taxes, but it says you're still subject to Prop 26 and Prop 218. So I just wanted you to be aware that, you know, we've taken a look at those bills. Like I said, they really have no effect that we can tell on us at this point because we totally don't allow it in our county. There is a rumor that there will be a potential ballot initiative on the November 2016 ballot regarding recreational marijuana. We are in discussions with the city managers and the city attorneys and county council that if that appears that, and once we have an idea what that language is, if there are things we want to do collectively as a community to respond to that, that we'll have that well in place, you know, before that goes on the November ballot. The only other thing I want to mention is at the federal level, the current Highway Transportation Authorization Bill expires this week, and we understand that the House and Senate leaders are trying to negotiate ways to come to conference by the end of the year, so we'll continue to watch that important transportation bill. That concludes my report. Thank you.
Very good. Thanks, Stan. Okay, before we adjourn, we will be going into closed session. Jack?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we have closed session to have conference with legal counsel to discuss a significant exposure to litigation involving one case related to Measure F on the November 3rd, 2015 ballot. This will be held pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, Subdivision D2. We do not expect a report out, and it would be appropriate to ask if anyone has comments on this matter.
Okay, do we have any comments regarding our closed session? If not, this meeting is adjourned.